Well, if I wasn't awake enough to realize I had issues to work on.
That's the rest of this world.
Then you're asleep.
That's most people.
And you will repeat your patterns.
It's most people. It's most people. Most people are living, well, more and more people are waking up right now. There's a lot of awakening happening. But I would say the majority are living in a place where they're just living trigger to trigger and anesthetizing through the drug, the food, the alcohol, the whatever it is to just push it down, push it down, push it down, push it down.
I believe that each and every one of us has the power within ourselves to create the life that we really want. And I want to help give you the tools to make that happen. I'm Danica Patrick, and I'm pretty intense. Today on the show is Gabby Bernstein. She is an author on self-improvement through spirituality, is the way I describe it. I remember seeing Gabby in Vermont at a Wonderlust, which is a big like yoga festival. And the things that she said that day, I still remember today, and it was years ago. Her newest book out is called Super Attractor. And so we talked about what that looks like. We talked about some of her struggles in her life that have forced her to look within. And also, you know, of course, the signs of what to look for when you know you're on the right track and how to get on the more in tune life flow or the spiritual path or, you know, just flowing with the universe, and that if you can just kind of allow, the universe will bring you everything that you could ever want and more. So you love Wayne Dyer and Abraham Hicks, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Gosh, they are my favorite.
Yeah.
How long ago did you, like, who did you discover first?
I think Wayne has been, and I say has been even though he's deceased, but he has been a mentor and teacher and guide of mine, even before he was my friend, even before he was in my life physically, right? So I've had the privilege of feeling that presence and that guidance. And I also still today feel the presence of Wayne probably even greater now, even though he's not in the physical form. Abraham Hicks have been a huge through line throughout the work that I've been inspired to teach. In this book, I mentioned them 26 times.
Really?
Yes. I would have dedicated the book to Abraham if it wasn't for my son that was born.
Other than that, which is, you know, been
really
a huge thing.
Dedicated to my son. Yeah, so that was fun.
Yeah, Abraham is really helped me with philosophies of like the understanding of energy and momentum.
Yeah.
And what if you had to identify like your biggest takeaway from Wayne and from Abraham? What would they be?
I guess, you know, it's a Wayne Dyer quote, change the way you look at things and the things you look at change. And that belief system is the through line through Super Attractor. It's really about having the willingness and the commitment to be in a constant state of allowing yourself to see things differently.
How is allowing? See, that's a hard thing. What do you like? Go deeper into allowing to see things differently. What is that?
So I believe it's a choice that we make. It's not, oh, okay, I'm just going to practice this and practice this, and then one day it'll just stick. That can happen. But I believe it's a conscious day-to-day moment-to-moment choice to choose again to see things in a different perspective. So when we make that commitment and that choice, it's actually a surrender. It's a surrender. It's a state of allowing, because we're really saying, I'm going to give over all of my stories and belief systems and agenda and needs and all the beliefs that we think that we have to create around ourselves to feel good enough. I'm going to put all of that aside, choose again, and allow a new perspective to come through. So it can't be another chore. It has to be something that we give over. When I say it, I mean personal growth, seeing things through the different lens. It has to be a conscious moment-to-moment choice, and a lot of surrender is required.
I'm so glad you said surrender, because I saw you speak in Vermont at Wonderlust back in the summer of 2016. I was on a girls' trip, where we love yoga, and you know, it was great to hear the talks. And so my friend Stacy, who has kind of been our little spiritual guide in the group, she's always one step ahead. She's always one step ahead of me, where I'm kind of like, and what about that concept again? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, cool.
And she was like, Gabby's amazing. We should go listen to her. And so I remember I took a ton of notes, but the thing that really stuck, of course, which is a big point in the book, was surrender and then surrender some more.
Yeah.
So you went into a long story about wanting to have a baby.
Yeah.
And how it wasn't happening for you and you had to surrender. And then you also mentioned timelines and how you get so attached to a timeline. And now I'm starting to paraphrase a little bit more because, again, it was a few years ago.
You're 100% right.
And it's so, and ever since then, timelines has always been something that I've talked about when I talk about if you can just let go of timelines because of what you said that day in Vermont.
Good.
And so it was really powerful.
Yeah.
So I would just love to hear about that process a little bit more in depth instead of the sort of like, here's 300 people listening to you speak at Wanderlust. Yeah. But I mean, it was all about wanting something so badly.
Yes.
And which is always interesting too, we could get into the Abraham Hicks stuff, which is all about like the resistance that it creates with the, anyway. But so you wanted a baby and it wasn't happening.
So this is such a through line throughout the book as well. I feel like my son is just like weaving this whole book together. The secret to truly manifesting your desires is to give over your timeline and to really recognize that your plan may not be the best plan. So it's fine to hold a desire and to be clear about what you want and to put energy into what you desire and to celebrate that desire and to bring positive energy into your life every single day that's going to lead you closer to that desire. But when you get into the story of, I need this now to feel good enough, or I need it to happen now because it's convenient in my life, or anything that's an agenda beyond the surrendered state of allowing, that's when we get in the way of the actual manifestation. Because the universe is always delivering, but just not always when we think we need it. And often not always in the exact same form that we think we need it. So when I write about methods for manifesting a life beyond your wildest dreams, so much of what I write about in this book is how to surrender and how to turn it over and how to release it and how to trust the universe. There's a story I tell in the book about how I tried to conceive my son for 3 years. You heard the earlier side of the story, which was, here I am, I'm trying to conceive. You probably saw me crying on the stage. This is so difficult for me.
I think we were crying.
We were all crying because I felt that struggle and I felt that comparison. And then, you know, 3 years later, towards the end of that journey, I really got to that state of surrender and I started to really let the universe show up for me. And so this is, I'll tell the story from the book because it's such a good one. This is such a good one. And one of my favorite places to manifest is driving. So I love driving because it's like driving around the country, there's no one around and all you see is foliage. At this moment that I'm going to refer to was in the fall. So there was this like epic foliage all around me. I was just listening to mantra music, driving, feeling so lit up, so excited. I just kept thinking about how wonderful it was to live in the country and how excited I was to have all this support in my life and these friends in my life and just really getting into the good vibrations, like just feeling good, reaching for more, and just listening to the mantras and chanting the mantras. When out of nowhere, I felt this presence of a baby in the back seat. It felt like a baby in a car seat behind me. And I started crying because it felt so real to me. I felt so real that I started being deeply moved by that experience. And then I heard this inner voice say to me, this voice of your intuition, inspiration, loud and clear, your baby's coming in March. And it was so loud and authoritative. I know, it was just like in my face. I was like, okay, March, here comes the baby in March. The baby's coming in March. And so I started, you know, really getting heady about like, oh, the baby's coming in March. And I started getting back on the timeline. Mm-hmm. And so the second I saw that happen, I just said, okay, universe, you take this. That doesn't work. Show me a sign that this baby's coming in March. And I want the sign to be lilies. I just chose that sign. A week later, I get a letter in the mail from a reader. And in the letter was a little prayer card. And on the back of the prayer card was a picture of Archangel Gabriel, who is typically depicted holding lilies. Mm. So on the back of the card that he sent me, he said, I don't know why, but I felt that you needed this. And I was like, yes, I did. I got my card. My baby's coming in March. Then early March rolls around and I wasn't pregnant. And so I was devastated because here I was like, the universe doesn't have my back. What's going on? And I walked into my husband's office. I was hysterically crying. I'm like, when is this going to happen? I really thought it was coming. I thought it was now. What's happening? And we just sat there and he held me. And all of a sudden, the phone that was sitting on the desk, my phone, started playing a song.
All of a sudden.
Out of nowhere. And you know when you think like, oh, my phone's doing something weird, so you like go to turn it off. But it, I looked at the phone, and as I went to try to turn it off, I heard the lyrics of the song, and the lyrics were, way go Lily, way go Lily, way go Lily. Wow. Then I looked closer, and the album title, so the song is called Way Go Lily, repeating the word Lily over and over again, and the album title is I See the Sign. Can't make it up.
Can't make it up.
These guys are laughing.
Wow.
So that happened. And I just rejoiced because I was like, okay, the universe is fully behind me. This is definitely happening. Even if it's not on my time, I'm going to give it over. Maybe it's not March. I'll give it over. Thank you, universe. And then I got pregnant in April and I did the math.
And it was still
March. I conceived March, the end of March, the last day of March.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So that kind of synchronicity, that kind of support, that kind of reminders, the recognition, the guidance, the intuition, that happens when we get into a good feeling vibration, like I was in the car, when we allow ourselves to just feel good no matter what. And this book isn't a book on how to get things, though it says that on the cover, you know, Manifest Life Beyond Your Wildest Dreams. It's a book on how to feel good. And when we feel good, whatever we desire starts to come into our life in a form that we could never imagine. And I can stand behind it. I can stand behind it because I've lived every practice in that book, even in my darkest moments when you need it most.
What have some of those other dark moments, like, what have they been?
Most recently, I'm about 6 months in recovery from postpartum depression, anxiety, and insomnia. I was at the lowest point suicidal. And I was about 4 months into my postpartum, and that's when it came on, which is not typical. Usually it comes on earlier. I was at the darkest moment of my life. And I've been through a lot of dark moments. You know, I've been in sober recovery for 14 years. I've remembered trauma. But like this scenario was by far, rocked me to my core, brought me to my knees. But I stayed in constant contact with a higher power of my own understanding. I stayed in constant communication with that inner guidance system through prayer. And even though the prayers weren't making it go away, the prayers were guiding me to the doctors, the medication, the healers, whatever it was that I needed to get back to baseline. And I'm feeling really good now because I've had the ability to get myself back to a really stable place and then do the deepest personal growth work I've ever done. So I can see that very, very dark period of my life as a catalyst for tremendous change and for this incredible opportunity to be on podcasts like this and, you know, national television and wherever I can get my voice out and talk about postpartum and talk about how serious a mental health condition it is and how mandatory it is that we allow ourselves to be helped.
What made this the darkest? Because as you've said, there have been lots of challenging things. And now you seemingly have everything, right? You wanted a child for so long and you have it. And what made this the darkest?
I've had many moments where I think it was a culmination of years of personal growth and all that I had behind me that allowed me to get out of that point. But the reason that it was the darkest moment was because it was my first taste of really understanding what mental illness is. While I've been in sober recovery for a long time and I struggled with addiction when I was in my 20s and remembered, you know, dissociated traumas and those scenarios in my life were probably considered mental illness from the standpoint of being depressed or having to anesthetize through drugs or alcohol. But I'd never experienced the type of mental illness that was causing panic attacks, that was causing insomnia, that was causing me to say on Mother's Day, I want to kill myself. And here I was, I had authored 7 self-help books and I was suicidal. So I'm so deeply grateful for that dark bottom because now I can speak to mental illness with so much conviction and authority and most importantly, authenticity. And I can see how when people come to me, my audiences, and for years they'd say I'm depressed or I have this biochemical issue. And my response was probably part of the stigma. I would say things like, well, you know, just meditate more. But without the level of awareness of where these kinds of conditions can take you, I wasn't in a position to be able to speak to medication and how you could use medication to go deeper on your spiritual path if you needed to, and to really honor that side of the conversation. Mm. And so it's been wildly valuable for me and for anyone that's been hearing me speak about this, because I've been getting countless emails from people saying, thank you for describing my symptoms and helping me see that I needed to get more help.
What does that more help look like? You talked about medications. Is this traditional medications or?
In my case, I was guided to a psychiatrist. My therapist intervened and said she has a biochemical issue. She has to be medicated. This is not her tools are no longer working. Was exactly what she said. And so I went on Zoloft, which is actually the most commonly prescribed medication for pregnant women and for postpartum, because it's the medication that you can breastfeed on, and it has the most stats on how it is for pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So I was still breastfeeding at the time. So I went on Zoloft, and it took several months to get to the right therapeutic dose. And once I was, I felt safe again. And that safety has allowed me to do even deeper work, which is I've been doing EMDR therapy.
What is that?
EMDR therapy is eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. And it's, to sort of simplify it, you have different buzzers in your hands or in your ears while you're talking about the emotional disturbance. Mm. And what happens is it allows the energetic disturbance to be handled in a different part of the brain. So it's typically locked in this little, let's put it like, I'm not a neuroscientist, but let's talk about it this way. Yeah. It's locked up, right?
Yep.
The trauma's locked up.
I'm not either, so it's okay.
Yeah. And, you know, if you dissociate from a trauma, it's on lockdown, but your body still remembers. You get triggered all the time. You can become an addict. You can become a workaholic. You can do all the things to avoid the feelings of those triggers. But when you start to practice something like EMDR therapy, it starts to open up the brain to start to, my therapist said it in this way, where it opens up the resourced part of your brain that can help you almost work out the traumatic experience in that moment, the trauma that got locked up in the first place, right? So it allows it to be, I'm saying this in so many strange ways, but trying to simplify it. Yeah. So it helps you release the trauma in such a way that you can actually walk out of an EMDR session, one session even, and feel completely different.
So do you have to recognize the trauma?
Not even. You don't even have to remember anything. You can just talk about the way it physically feels, or you could talk about how you yelled at the doorman today, and that experience of yelling at the doorman might have been your trauma response. And so if you just go into the feeling of that trauma response, it can unlock the fight or flight.
That's an area that I've been diving into myself, which is childhood trauma, yeah. Attachment trauma.
Yeah.
And everyone has it.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you able to identify something in that?
Yeah. So in 2016, sphere? I remembered being abused as a child. And
how?
I remembered it through a dream first. And then I was like, no, thank you. I'm not going to touch that because it's terrifying.
That was just a bad dream.
But it was a real dream. Like, you know, when I woke up and I was like, that was the most real dream I've ever had. Mm. Then I wound up days later, just down the street from here, in my therapist's office. And she said something that triggered me to accept that it was true. And that put me on a really deep journey of big, big growth and recovery. And in that time of that growth and recovery, I wrote 3 books. You know, I wrote books that were deep and books that were healing me as I wrote them.
Do you know where it was holding you back? Because
everywhere.
Everywhere?
Yeah. I mean, in some ways it was a great gift because it gave me this deep core desire to serve people and to help people feel better, because I was constantly in a state of fight or flight. And I was using my spiritual practice every single day to get back to baseline, But I was just like this. I was like so far out, and then I'd come so far back in, and then I'd have some days of sustainable serenity, and then I'd go so far back out because the trauma was still in my body. It was still in my, it was in my brain. It was just, it was leading me. By the time I was in 2016, I was becoming safe enough to remember it because I'd done so much great spiritual and personal growth work that I was getting to a place where I was safe enough. But it was affecting me mainly with addictive patterns, work addiction. First of all, it was drug addiction and alcoholism, and then it was work addiction, and the belief that I am unsupported and that nobody can help me, not letting anybody help me.
So that was your coping mechanism for
just to control.
It was
everything.
To control.
Yeah, controlling is a big coping mechanism for trauma.
Yeah, I've dove into certain triggers I have, but I wouldn't say that everything was affected, but, identifying where my weaknesses or where I repeat patterns are, and then what is the feeling now? Well, the feeling is this, I am not enough. Okay. Is that true? Of course not. I know I'm enough.
Right.
That's a conscious thought. That's not a subconscious thought. And so then
so
where
sounds like you're doing CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, like really talking back to yourself.
I do, yes, and I also do, have you ever heard of Elisa Romeo?
No.
She wrote a book called Meet Your Soul, and I read it, and it has to do with, understanding that your soul you are in direct communication, universe, you're in direct communication, and so I do what I would call soul journaling, a soul dialogue.
Beautiful.
Where it has to be... not a lot of thought to it. It has to be very impulsive.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
My soul's name is Lucy. So I'm like, okay, how am I doing today? Well, you're doing it. And then you just start asking questions.
A lot of that in Super Attractor.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever done anything like that before?
Yes. Just stream of conscious writing and prompting so that you could let the voice of your, I would call it your higher self, come through. I also have great faith in that type of practice because so much of recovering from trauma is about reintegration and reintegrating with that child part of yourself. So what happens is your adult self becomes like the protector, but the child self is just the wounded, fear-based, that's who acts out with the trigger, right? That's who's so terrified in those moments. So we have to start to learn how to reintegrate with bring the child self back to the adult self. On my 40th birthday, this really cool thing happened where I was in a yoga class and I was lying down in Shavasana. This was last week, so I just turned 40.
Mm-hmm.
And just a week ago, I was 39. And,
in my 30s.
close to 30s. So I was lying in Shavasana after my yoga class and I was lying down. All of a sudden, the yoga teacher was like, searching for a song. And I kept thinking to myself, she's going to bring on a song that's going to really do something for me. Like I just knew it. And so she puts on some like 90s, like kind of emo song. I don't even know what it was. It was like, so emo. And it took me back to like college and like feeling so lonely in college and the snow and driving around that I just felt that feeling. And then it took me to my drug addiction and I saw myself on the floor of my apartment and I was just feeling that feeling. And then it took me to like my codependency and relationships. And I saw myself with my now husband, but like the dark moments of that and just being in those feelings. And I just saw myself in these in-between periods between, not in my child self and not in my full adult self, but that in between. And I kept feeling myself into these feelings and crying and like on the mat in Shavasana crying. And I just was like, what a repair. Like I came out of that and I was like, that's integration. Like that's a decade, over a decade of personal growth work and spiritual work that just like culminates in these moments when we can go back. And what I did was I saw myself in these moments and I went back and I grabbed that girl of all those different times and I brought her back to myself. And it's about bringing your younger self back to safety. That was awesome.
That's amazing. 3.5 minutes of such therapy. The reintegration, I mean, that's something that, it's one thing to think something, it's another thing to like put it into practice.
That's right.
And so what are some practices? Like what are your normal ritualistic practices that keep you present? Because life just gets to us.
What keeps me present is transcendental meditation.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. So I do 2 20-minute meditations every day. There is a mantra that you're given when you get trained in TM. Mm-hmm. You don't tell anybody your mantra. Mm-hmm. And you repeat your mantra and you repeat your mantra. You close your eyes and relax wherever you are, even if you're in the back of an Uber or whatever. You know, if you're busy, you got to do where you got to do it. Mm-hmm. And you sit in your TM and you repeat your mantra, and then your mind's going to wander. You're going to hear something. You're going to get taken out, and you just return to your mantra. Mm-hmm. Then you'll get taken out again and you'll turn to your mantra. And then the more you just allow the mantra to take over, the more you can go into that transcendental state where it's, you release your thoughts and your body, your cortisol levels drop, and you just, you're just really, really supporting your nervous system. That is my anchor. That's been the most valuable thing I've found, among many other things.
What are some new things?
The newest thing is playing with this little boy called Oliver. He is a great spiritual practice for me. That's a big one, being with
my son.
And
what do you mean a great spiritual practice?
Well, he's a practice in presence. You know, put that phone down. Be with the person. Be with him completely. I mean, he's 11 months and he can see the second I'm distracted, right? And so it's just being in his full presence and giving him my full presence out of respect to his humanness and to my ability and privilege of being a mother.
What's the favorite? What's the best? I'm not a mom. So, I mean, I'm 37. I'm not a mom. I might be someday, but getting up there.
Listen, honey, I have my first baby. I was 38 in my pregnancy. I was 39 when a month later, I delivered at 39. I'm going to be trying for my second baby in my 40s. Okay. So, you know, take your time. You're good. 37's okay.
Timelines.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And more and more women are having babies later. So let that, it's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good.
How, I think one of the things that gets complicated, especially when you start dipping into childhood trauma and triggers, is it makes relationships challenging.
Very.
Because you might have a response to something. It doesn't make sense, right? And they're like, what? I might be looking at him going, what? And he'd look at me going, why did you respond like that?
Yeah.
But it's a trigger.
I'm triggered, yeah.
And so what are, like, how did that show up in your relationship?
I think that all relationships are people coming together where their wounds meet another person's wounds so that they can be healed. And often if you show up for that, right, and you say, okay, my wounds are matching your wounds, and we think that together these wounds will become whole because we're together, but then it, you know, all explodes. If we work on that, then we can get to that place of real holy love, right? That place of recognition and transformation. But if we're not willing to do the work, then it won't work, right? Mm-hmm. Or if one person's willing to do the work and the other person's not, it won't match up, right? Mm-hmm. So in my case, my husband and I have been both very committed to doing our own work privately, our work together, spiritual path and personal growth path. And our commitment to the work is what has given us great transformation. There's more. We're continuing to do it every single day. But it gets better and better every day, the more safe we become with each other, the more committed we become to our own personal journey and to each other. So I guess the answer is, if there's a couple struggling with their wounds, you know, triggering each other's wounds, which is most couples, get into couple therapy. Get somebody great to support you. If you can't afford that, there are trainings out there. There are free courses online. Do whatever you can. Books, get a book. Do the work. Do the work.
Yeah. Yeah. It is work. And I mean, I'm reading a book called Mindset by Carol Dweck. And I had this opinion of relationships that, like, oh, you love me or you don't. All in or not all in.
Yeah.
And I'm reading the part about relationships. Yeah. And you're reading the part about open, like, growth mindset versus fixed mindset. And I've obviously grown up and been programmed to be in a fixed mindset of like, and you know, it's true because I'm, again, these are the things that are coming back to me. But you know, when I was a kid, my dad would be like, oh, we suck. We should just go home. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a fixed mindset, right? The mindset needed to be, okay, we're not very good. We need to practice more.
Yeah.
Right. And the attachment to like being more connected with the progress versus the result.
Totally.
but it really, it's a real challenge. And like you said, it takes two people that want to work on it.
Yeah, that's it's required.
And be conscious to it.
Yeah, it's required that you both do the work. Yeah. One person can't do it. One person can do their own work. If their partner is not willing to do the work, then you, the other partner, do the work, right? Not you, but the person listening, do your work. And there's always the potential that in the presence of your growth, they will rise up and say, hey, what are you doing? I want to do more of that, whatever it may be. There's also the high potential that you'll just rise up and they won't. And you'll be like, I'm out, you know? So just do your own work. If they're not willing to do it, you start by doing your own.
I do have a theory.
I don't like that we're calling it work, though. I want to call it, it's a privilege to do personal growth work. So I'd prefer to call it path, right? Let's say like, get on your path.
I can't imagine not being awake enough to realize I need to work on it.
Right? You can't imagine not being awake enough to realize?
Well, if I wasn't awake enough to realize I had issues to work on.
That's the rest of this world.
Then you're asleep.
That's most people.
And you will repeat your patterns.
It's most people. Most people are living, more and more people are waking up right now. There's a lot of awakening happening. But I would say the majority are living in a place where they're just living trigger to trigger and anesthetizing through the drug, the food, the alcohol, the whatever it is to just push it down, push it down, push it down, push it down. But anybody that's watching this right now, they're not, because they have the willingness to see things differently. They would not be landing on this video or audio right now if they were not open and willing.
What is your, in the vein of relationships, I feel like when you start getting into more of the spiritual side of life and perspectives, you always get that twin flame that comes up. You're like, I want to find my twin flame. Do you believe in that? Do you believe that's true?
Your perfect twin flame is the person that triggers all your shit. Yeah.
What about Dark Night of the Soul?
I think that we can have multiple moments in our life that you could refer to as a dark night of the soul, but call it that, call it a bottom, call it a transformation, call it the shift. But when we have moments in our life where we are brave enough to go to the places that scare us, that's when we come out the other side. And it's our willingness and bravery to go there that's going to be the way that we heal.
What was the first thing that you remember being like, this is the one, like I'm feeling brave enough to face this fear?
The trauma. Yeah. And I
when was that?
It's still happening. I'm still working on it.
Oh yeah. We're all in trauma, but how long ago was that?
In 2016, I remembered. When I say remembered, you know, as a child, particularly, you can dissociate from the experience and gets locked up in the brain, like we talked about. And
it's a coping mechanism to forget it.
The brain's an exceptional thing. I mean, yeah. it's a protection mechanism. It says, you know, we don't have the same trauma response that like an animal would have. You know, they could just shake it out and move on. We don't shake it out, so we hold it, and that's fight, flight, or freeze. Right. Wow. So you can be frozen, and then you can act out in fight or flight when you're triggered. And you can go back to frozen, you know, it's a lot of different responses. So, I'm still working on it, but I'm feeling more free than I've ever felt. I'm grateful for the dark nights because they got me here.
My girlfriends and I talk about the spiritual journey, and we talk about how if you were to describe the spiritual journey to someone, no one would sign up. Right? No one would sign up for the spiritual journey on purpose because it is challenging.
And
it hurts.
Yes.
Because you're being an alchemist to your traumas and to your fears and the things going on in your life, and you're having to face them to transform
them.
That's
right.
But once you've started the process, I haven't met anyone that will not continue the process and doesn't in fact dive deeper.
Yes. Yes. I agree. I think some people though, like I would say for myself though, if I had two choices, I had two choices. I could stay drunk and die, you know, stay on cocaine and die, or I could choose the spiritual path that I knew was going to not be easy. Mm-hmm. And I made that choice. Like I made that split decision.
What was the wake up call?
Well, I was doing a drug that takes you down hard and fast. I was doing cocaine. So I was taking hard down hard and fast. You know, I think a lot of people that may just, these days, you know, people are doing even more difficult drugs to get off of. But in my case, it wasn't as hard to get off of because I for physically, but also because I had such a desire to be better, to feel better. It was such a strong desire to feel better. I got myself, I picked myself up off the floor. Nobody intervened. You know, it was my own spiritual intervention.
There was no essential rock bottom?
There was a rock bottom and a voice within me once again, like we've spoken about, saying, get clean and you will live a life beyond your wildest dreams. That's what I heard on October 2nd, 2005. I went to a recovery meeting that day and I've been sober ever since.
So we talked about, like earlier, we were talking about like big signs, right? The story of your son coming and when he came. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is like giant signs. But so many times they're way much more subtle than that. Mm-hmm. And what do you have to do? Like, what are some steps you can take to, if somebody's listening to this and they're like, I want to hear my soul. I want to hear the universe. I want to hear messages. I want to see signs.
Read the book. I don't like, I'll give you an exact lesson, but that's what this whole book is about. This whole book is about getting deeper into your connection and awareness of a spiritual foundation and a spiritual relationship. And there's actually practices in the book about asking for a sign. But anybody watching right now could say this simple prayer of thank you, universe, or whatever you believe in. Thank you, angels. Thank you, grandma. Thank you, God, for revealing to me that I am being guided. And ask for any sign that you feel is resonant to you, a song, something that's specific enough that you would know, you know, yellow heels, right? Mm-hmm. Or you could ask for, a lizard or a cardinal. There's, you know, something specific. Your sign will land in your face. It will be very, very quickly come through.
Do you think people are afraid to ask for signs?
Definitely.
Why?
Because they're afraid to surrender. They're afraid to let over their will. They think that if I start to rely on a power beyond my own, what will I be? It's a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a big existential crisis for people.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that you talk a lot about is turning fear into faith. What is your religious background?
I was brought up
Jewish,
but I don't really practice Judaism other than the cultural holiday things with my family. But my household, we identify as spiritual, right? So mm-hmm. we practice the power of positive thinking. We practice the practices of Abraham, A Course in Miracles, but we don't have a specific religion in my home.
Do you and your husband share the same?
Yeah.
Is he Jewish?
He's Jewish too. Okay. Again, much like myself, was not really particularly. We grew up in very reformed communities. I was bat mitzvah, he was bar mitzvah. But yeah. You know, we live in a town where there isn't a temple, and we get a lot of the Jewish culture particularly through my sister-in-law, who's become very much mm-hmm. she's like a sister to mm-hmm. me. She is my sister. Mm-hmm. She's so divine in that she brings a lot of the spiritual a lot of the religious, Jewish religion and tradition into our home mm-hmm. through the holidays. Mm-hmm. So we have that. We have mm-hmm. an anchor for that with my husband's family and my family.
How do you feel about religion in general?
I think anything that you feel brings you a connection to the divine in whatever form that comes for you is perfect. I don't care how people get there. If you get there through religion, if you get there through sports, if you get there through meditation, it doesn't matter how you get there. It's that you get there.
How are you going to raise your son?
Spiritual.
With his beliefs and with his practices? Like, what are the things you're implementing already?
The most important thing is respecting his feelings. Mm. So if he's, you know, upset about something, just not saying shush, 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 you shouldn't be upset. Instead saying, I see, I understand you're upset right now. Or, you know, if he's upset about something and we can't do anything about it in the moment, like he just sat down to eat and he's in his chair and he's screaming in his chair, I would look at him and say, I understand, I know. Nobody likes to be locked up in a chair, but there's good food coming, you know. Just have a dialogue with him and just say, I understand and I respect that you're not feeling comfortable right now. Even if I can't change your circumstances, I understand that you're uncomfortable right now.
Are there some things from your childhood that you're like, I'm gonna change that, and this is how I'm gonna change it?
Don't get me started.
Probably for all of us, but Maybe yeah. like a couple of things you're like, hey, these are the things like fundamentally that are core values for me that I'm going to
Core values, honoring his feelings, full presence, being fully present with him. Allowing, you know, one of the things that my parents did do was, particularly my mom, really taught me that I could do anything, that I was capable of doing anything. There wasn't a lot of limitation. And so I'll carry that on for sure, that belief that I can do it. Yeah.
Do you have a relationship with your parents?
Yeah.
Do you think that it's important to, can you heal from trauma? Because again, as we've said, like we all have childhood trauma. Can you fully heal without them being involved?
Yes. Yep.
Do you think they need to know? As any part of your healing.
If they're very involved in your life and they're triggering you, I think it will only be inevitable. If you're going to go do deep work, that it will come out in some way. Because part of your work and your recovery and trauma healing is going to require you owning your voice around what happened to you.
What are some areas that you're actively working on?
I'm definitely still actively working on full freedom. Like, I just want to be free from trauma. I want to live to tell. I'm going to write a killer book about it. And I'm going to really, really be able to support and serve people when I can fully stand in my full freedom and recovery. And I want to really live that. And I know people will say, oh, you never really recover. Yeah, I'm going to. I absolutely am going to. My therapist said, I said, I don't think, 90% of people recover from this. She said 99.9% don't recover from this. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to, so that I can live to tell and help others do it. Okay. So that's what I'm working on. It's continuing to just shine the crystal and go deeper 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 with the bravery that I have to go deeper so that I can come out the other side and really, really help people.
Where did you get this kind of determination to?
I came here in this way. I think that my soul, as you said, just said, like, sign me up. Let's go big. Let's experience whatever we got to experience that we can genuinely speak in this way about what you know to be true and help shift shame, help people reframe their fears, help people become free.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
I'm not exactly sure. Like, I think that I believe that we become spirit when we leave the body. That I know that. I know that that the spirit continues on. The reincarnation part, I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure. I know this, that spirit can carry on in many forms and guide and teach in that spirit form. Potentially a spirit could take on the energy of another being, but I don't know exactly how I feel about that yet.
Sometimes.
I think we may likely come back around, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it helps define old souls, right? Don't you think they're just people that you're like, wow, you're just really wise.
Yeah, and it also defines connections to people. Like, there's people in my life that, like, we've been here before. Like, I know, like, when my son was born, I looked at him and the first thing I said when they put him in my arms was, I know you. I looked at him and I said, I know you. So I guess my answer is yes. I think we can come back in different forms.
Do you think that we come back to learn the lessons that we haven't learned yet?
Yeah. Yeah. I think if we are going to come back, we come back to relearn and to get closer to that connection to spirit. And I do believe that if we get it in the physical form, that we don't necessarily have to come back. So, like, while I'm still sort of not still developing my full belief system on reincarnation, I do believe that our soul will continue to relearn lessons so that we can get to a place of being free. Yeah. And in that place of freedom, we may not need to come back in the physical form.
Yeah. Well, that to me is where I root, like, that drive to learn the lessons, to be brave, is because it's like, I don't want to come back and do it again.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to do this lesson over again because it's hell right now.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to do this hell again.
Yeah.
And I want to heal as many karmic life cycle wounds or traumas or, just personality traits that I don't want to do it again.
I hear you.
I want to come back bigger, better, stronger.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I don't want to do it again tomorrow. How about that?
Yeah. What's your definition of or perspective on heaven and hell?
I don't have a perspective on heaven and hell. It's not a place I go to.
Hmm. Do you feel like you've been in hell before?
I mean, you could use hell as a description of where, you know, being in a dark moment.
Yeah.
But from a from an existential conversation, I don't know that that's language I would lean on.
Hmm. So you just don't use those words like
No, never, no. I would say fear and love, right? But when we're in a state of fear, we are perpetually recreating the stories that keep us, I guess, in, you know, living in a hell-like state, right? Feeling like we're constantly in that trigger, or we're constantly in that story, or we're constantly in that panic or that pain or that suffering. And it, I believe that it's when we reprogram, unlearn that fear and remember the love of who we are, that's when we can live in this world, but think with the thoughts of heaven, right? And experience the world, but have a perspective that's more aligned with what you may call God or the universe or love.
What would you say are your top three biggest lessons that you've learned in this life?
Good question. The more me I become, the more confident I am. So my authenticity is what defines my confidence.
Give me an example of a time where you said, this is one of those where I'm going to be more me.
I think I've been saying it consistently for 15 years. Just showing up every day saying, okay, how could I do that more? How could I lean in more? How could I be more me? How could I say the truth, tell the truth even more? Because whenever I notice myself out of that truth, that I feel like a fraud, I feel like I feel like I'm unworthy. I feel, you know, that it's just, I don't feel right when I'm not in my truth.
So it's a feeling.
It's a feeling.
Because that's another question is, how do you know who you really are in this world of stimulation and distraction? How did you find out?
When you have a spiritual foundation, you have a spiritual practice, you start to feel things in a different way, particularly when you're in your contemplative practices like meditation. Mm-hmm. And you can start to feel a energy take over you, and you can feel a presence of joy that you would never have known before. And you can sit in that joy and that peace. And that's who you are. So that's why people return back to a spiritual practice, because they just want to really cultivate that presence of peace. And the more you rely on your spiritual practice, the more that presence becomes second nature. Big life lessons. The biggest one is turn it over fully and completely. And I've had to learn that one. When I say turn it over, surrender. Yeah. And I've had to learn that one over and over and over and over and over and over again. So much so that even yesterday, I'm in my bathroom, on the floor, on my knees, saying, God, take this from me. Help me with this. Sort it out. Within 24 hours, I was better.
Wow.
So when I really let it go, that things get fast, that things speed up, that things work out. That's the biggest one. Probably the biggest one. And then I guess another life lesson. I definitely learned the life lesson to recognize that the more aligned with service I am, the happier I am, the more I can give in the world, the more me I am, the more connected I feel to other people, that I can recognize myself and others. That is such a nice one.
I think you're doing a great job being of service. I think your books are a great example of a big portion of that, to share that knowledge and experience and be so vulnerable and connect with people in that way, because there's so many things that go on in our life and we just overlook them, or we dismiss them, we push them down, and we don't want to talk about them, and we're embarrassed. But like we've been saying, we're all dealing with all of these things.
Yes.
And getting it out of you, getting it out of you and recognizing it is such a big step. And so your books are fantastic for how to do that and how to recognize those things. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's so nice.
Thanks everybody for listening to the Pretty Intense podcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like what you heard today and you want to hear more, please click on the subscribe button.